design I have right now.
Okay. You know, I mean, it depends upon your curiosity and such. Usually, these designs can be slightly optimized for different environments by adjusting the geometry of the inducing coil, the small loop within the big loop. You can change it to be a little bit forward from the plane, a little bit back from the plane, a little bit off to the right or left, a little bit higher. You shouldn't have it touch the magnetic loop because it's inducing a magnetic field coupling the driver, which is the small loop, with the radiating magnetic loop. And by the way, most people don't really believe that the magnetic loops operate on magnetic fields. All of our antennas operate through electromagnetism. It's kind of like saying a coin only has a heads but not a tails. And surface effect is a function of all radiating antennas. At a high frequency, because of eddy currents that are produced in the core of conductors, most of the current operates on the very, very surface of any piece of conductor. When you have things like transmission lines, the current is going on the surface of your center wire and the inner aspect of the shield surrounding it, as opposed to through the entire substance of the conducting material.
Comment?
Yes?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you very much.
WGPC, I have two questions for the questioner. How do you adjust that antenna to the lowest SWR? And two, how is it on the receive side? Going back to the first question, when you change bands, what do you have to do for that antenna?
Environment cannot be just magnetic loop. It has to be electromagnetic.
Okay, Wesley, Rich, you both doubled with each other. I got the gist of both of it. Like I mentioned before, magnetic loops are, in my mind and in the mind of many people who discuss them, describe them, document them, are shortened center bent dipoles, actually, with a little bit of a twist. You can't have a magnetic field transmitter. Magnetic fields dissipate with the inverse cube or quad rule, so they dissipate almost immediately. So it's an electromagnetic wave. So let's see. Ivan, were you able to hear Rich W2BZ's question to you?
Oh, yeah. I actually heard it was a perfect double, but I heard Rich's station much where I'm at was much more powerful. Wesley was a little bit subdued. So the way I'm tuning the mag loop is for the noise. So I have my 705 plugged into the magnetic loop. So the loop is designed for 80. It goes from 80 meters to 10 meters. I tried it on 80, but it's a complete debacle because it goes to infinity, the SWR, no matter what I do. But on 15, 10 meters, I would tune it to the highest noise. Once I get the noise the loudest, then I start adjusting or scanning the SWR on my 705, and I will get it to the lowest possible value by just fine-tuning the capacitor point at the mag loop, just a little tiny time to get the SWR on the particular frequency as low as possible, at the lowest value that the radio shows me. Then I transmit. But again, even if it's slow, I don't even think that I'm getting down. I mean, I might have a good SWR of 15 meters, but I have a feeling I'm just not getting out. Back to net.
Okay, does that answer your question, Rich?
Almost. When you fine-tune it for lowest SWR, What is that SWR on 15? And listen, these bands can be very quiet. I have a mag loop that works very well, and sometimes, you know, I don't hear anybody. So my question is, one, do you ever hear anybody? And two, have you tried it on 20 meters because that's the most active band on HF? That's not 40 or 80. So 10, 15, 20, you'll have the best luck on 20 meters. What's your SWR on 20 meters? And I'm afraid the Faraday cage effect is really limiting you. Any way to put it a little outside the window? I think the chameleon is that sort of swished square configuration. Who makes the one that you have? Go ahead.
Okay, so the 20-meter SWR, the lowest I could ever get through the entire band by scanning and experimenting and moving it around was between 2 and 2.5. That's the lowest in 20-meter band. The same locations, the 15-meter band, the lowest I could get, I was able to get was 1.21 SWR, which is good. That's the only band that actually I hear the most. 10 meters is, again, I'm going to, I don't know why, but I'm getting higher SWR values than on sort of in the bottom of the queue on 15 meters. Then you go to, on the right-hand side, this is your 20, and it's going to go up, and then 10 on the left-hand side, or vice versa, it's going to go up the SWR value. So I'm kind of bottom out on the 15 meters. I don't know why. Like, again, I was carrying it, I was moving it around as close to the window as I could get, and those are my SWR values. Again, 40 meters is 15 meters are off the charts. The local active here at night, that's probably the best time I can get on the air, but it doesn't worth trying. I tried it in many times. 40 meters is never, I couldn't get the SWR lower than 3+. So I don't know who makes them. It says chameleon. I got it from dxengineering.com. It's called, the antenna called is called chameleon CHA loop 3 antenna, and I got the plus package because of those bigger radiators. Because the normal, the regular package is just the LMR 400. But those are, the plus package includes the aluminum radiators that are, well, 1 inch in diameter because it shows the highest efficiency value. Again, this whole marketing, I don't know how it works, I don't know anything about the antennas, just learning, but here's the answers to your questions. Back to that, KG2GS.
So you have the CHA coupling, let's say, this CHAF loop 3.0. By the way, Rich, Commune is the name of the company. They're very big in near vertical incident skywave and military type of antenna design. Now, when I'm looking at the website, it seems to have adjustable extenders for the coupling loop. Is that your model? I see here three kind of lock and position, knobs that that lock it in position close to the other end of the loop. Is that the way yours look?
Yes and no. So if you go to the DxEngineering website and put in CHA loop 3, they have different entries or products for the same thing. I have the one, depending on the package. So if you buy the plus package, you include all the other packages plus the aluminum radiators. That's what I got. I do have the first loop, the second loop, the barrel coupling, and the that's a full or total package, but the plus package is the aluminum radiators. And I when you order Plus, they send you everything. So that's where I have this. For 80 meters, you just take and connect the two other loops together, and it makes the diameter kind of overall bigger, and you should be able to get on the 80 meters. But maybe it's good for somewhere outside, somewhere, you know, parks on the air or something, when there's no obstacles, but definitely not in my apartment. Again, I think the most luck I've ever had will be on 50 meters, maybe. But yeah, I got the Plus package. I never even used the LMR 400 loops that come with it. They're still in my bag.
Okay, but the thing, it's a very weird website. You can't really visualize it. At least I can't. It's kind of all over the place and has drop down menus and such. But the positioning of the driving loop, at least from the illustration that I see here, is that it's on an extension rod that's adjustable, so that theoretically it would seem that you can position the we'll say the Y component of you know, how close to the top of the loop the coupling source loop, the small loop, is. Is your model like that, where you can adjust its height in position on the plane of the larger loop?
Yes, it comes with that. You're seeing it correctly. It's just a kind of adjustable monopod or something like that. Yeah, it goes up and down from 7 or 11 inches up to 24 inches.
Okay, so the instructions forbid you from adjusting the distance, because I would imagine it might not be the total solution. I think part of it is, unfortunately, in a bad situation where you're in a Faraday cage with a little hole out the front where your window is, and it's just most of the radiation is, you know, half of the radiation is going backwards into the back of your room, and only half of it is kind of going anywhere near the window. But still, just to hopefully be able to tweak the SWR for the 10-meter band that you're interested in, is it at all possible to adjust the length of where the driven coil is? And have you ever entertained the thought of adjusting it in very small increments to see if you could optimize the SWR under those circumstances?
Honestly, I haven't experimented with the height of the driving loop, because I just followed the instructions, because I thought they didn't know any better. I haven't even had a clue that it's one of the ways to adjust your influence, your SWR. So I put it to where they told me to put it, basically within the quarter of an inch from the primary loop, but not touching. That's where I left it. But there is an option to fold it down or higher up.
Yeah, I think you should kind of pencil that in your list of things to do. Once again, you shouldn't have it touching the larger loop. It's designed to couple inductively, not physically. So you don't want to short it out, because that's not going to do any good. But you can very possibly increment it in different lengths, the smaller the better, and see if it has any, and it will definitely have some effect. Whether it's beneficial or not, I can't tell you, because these things in some cases are designed to be offset a little forward or offset a little back. They really, changing their physical position relative to the magnetic loop affects the coupling and affects the impedance transforming qualities. And that's the whole point of this, is to adjust the impedance of the antenna back to that 50 ohms that we keep talking about. When you're having a 3-to-1 SWR, it means that it's coupling, but only so much as to give it a 150-ohm impedance rather than a 50-ohm impedance. So any kind of physical slight modification of the geometries between the small loop and the big loop might help. It's a suggestion. A solution for the window problem, unfortunately, I don't have my magnetic loop, once I got it into my backyard, functioned a heck of a lot better than inside my shack. But I realized that you can't do that. So you might kind of be stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Roger. So I was just kind of tricked into the idea that magnetic loops have higher penetration capabilities than a regular wire antenna. I was wrong. Yeah, it kind of makes sense. If you have a radio wave consists of electromagnetic field and magnetic field, one goes along with the other. It makes total sense. I guess they have the same penetration abilities.
Yeah, electromagnetic wave, the characteristics of penetration are dependent upon their frequency. Different frequency of electromagnetic waves respond differently to different mediums. You see that, again, I'll take it into the optics. There's glass, a lot of glass, that is transparent for visible light. You see right through it. But if you try to shine infrared, some of the mediums will block it. And different materials have different frequencies that they're transparent in. And so you're not going to really change the quality of whether electromagnetic waves pass through brick and stone and metal by using a different type of antenna. Antennas can direct the distribution of electromagnetic waves. They can focus them to a finer beam, and if you break open a little hole that it can get out of, with a Yagi or something, I guess you could kind of point it out to that aperture. Quality as getting through different mediums doesn't change because of the antenna design. They're all utilizing electromagnetic radiation as the means of our communication.
Roger, WTBZ. I have spent literally hundreds of hours building and testing magnetic loops.
For example,
and what I found is that
I get my
varying the distance between the small inner loop and the outer loop maybe makes the difference of one S unit.
That also means that I can
basically
one
S unit
the station on this antenna.
So I just leave mine as close
communicate with that
to the small inner loop as close to the outer loop without touching. But here's what you should do.
Work like that.
You haven't answered the question, what do you hear? I suggest that from 3 o'clock to about 6 o'clock, you listen on 20 meters. Tune it for 20 meters like you tune it, and then listen and see what you hear. If you don't hear anything, then you're in trouble. That's, to me, the most active, the best way to test maybe any antenna is 20 meters in the late afternoon. My daughter lives right on the border of Regal Park and Forest Hills, so you're probably neighbors. And I know those apartment buildings there along Queens Boulevard. So, let me ask you this. What do you hear? What have you heard? Have you heard Kiso's going on, and where are the two different, the ham stations in a Kiso, where are they located, if you've heard any? Go ahead.
I hear very little. I heard stations, depending on the station, some people, as you know, they put in 1,500 watts. I hear people from London, but not London, but England. Again, if the station is powerful, I hear it. Mostly from, I'm completely blocked from the west side. My window's facing, directly east. Everything on the west side is a wall of concrete. And why is triple as high as my apartment building? So I don't think I rarely hear stations from the West Coast. Europe during the day, but again, not as many stations. I also have a receiving loop antenna, active loop W6LVP receiver, short wave receiving antenna. The antenna hears everything. Everything. At the same location that my magnetic loop chameleon antenna is. Same location, but dead end, but it's just a receive-only antenna. I assume they work differently, and that makes perfect sense. But I hear all the station, all the activity, even pirate stations, everything, during night, during the day. But not as many on the chameleon, and that's probably because, I don't know, maybe the very sharp cue on that antenna, because if you want to hear things, you got to retune it all the time, because I only tune it for that particular frequency I'm going to work. Yes, receiving is a little bit more forgiving in terms of range, but still not as great as receiving only loop antenna. So that's that. And yes, I live in one of those apartment complexes right on the off the north side of Queens Boulevard. So.
Well, are you able to attach your receiving antenna to your 705?
Yes, I hear everything loud and clear. That's no issue. Plus, Icon 705 is tremendous. It's incredible. In the stations that I compared it to other receivers on the same location, 705 just gets the out of the signal.
So you're saying when you put the receiving antenna on your 705, you hear a lot more than when you put the chameleon on the 705?
Yep, that's exactly correct, because I have a W6LDP active loop antenna. It has a preamp. You have to feed it with 12 volts of power, and with four down or whatever it is. But of course the receiving range, higher bandwidth, anything on that without adjusting, tuning.
How many feet of coax do you have on your chameleon?
Comes with 12 feet of coax straight out of the package in my apartment. It's a studio apartment very well, so it's more than enough.
Yeah, so the coax isn't a factor. But I don't know why you should be hearing a lot more activity with your receiving antenna than the chameleon. That's a little bit of mystery. It's a whole other quagmire about transmitting, but receiving, you should be able to hear just as well on your chameleon as you are on the receiving antenna.
Well, that's actually part of my disappointment, but with chameleon. And again, as I think Roy explained it to me, that Faraday cage plays a role, because really I'm transmitting with one side of the loop, one that's facing my window. Again, the reason I was asking that, you know, magnetic loop, the way they were advertised, or YouTube it a lot, they say, hey, magnetic field, it doesn't care about any obstacles. Works differently than the electric wire antennas, electric fields, or whatever. I just bought into it, but, well, I'm learning.
AC2GS, let me put in my 2 cents before I double with anyone. The reason why your receiver loop antenna is operating better probably is because it doesn't have to tune. It's kind of locked off at a particular setting, and it offsets that mistuning with an active high power, high gain, low noise amplification circuit. It's very similar to the one that I used to have. Whereas I think there's some problem with your chameleon loop. For whatever reason, it's not acting like a resonant magnetic loop. You should theoretically be able to find a detent in the capacitor setting where you come relatively close to a one-to-one visua. It should be tunable. You know, maybe not perfectly tunable, but far better than 3-to-1. So, whether there's something particularly wrong with your model whether its orientation of the driving element is not quite optimized, I can't tell you. But that's the reason for the mismatch. That for whatever reason, your chameleon is not operating the way it's theoretically supposed to. Since you're operating both magnetic loops in the same Faraday cage, you can kind of, you know, make assumptions, compare it. With receivers are very forgiving for mismatches, especially if you have a high-gain amplifier hooked in. And that's why you can't use it as a transmitter, because there's a high-gain amplifier circuit in line. If you fed it with RF, you'd burn out the amplification stage of your receiving loop.
Well, yeah, Roy, it doesn't seem at all that the difference is the amplifier on the receiving antenna.
Maybe
because if you're not getting the signal, then it's just going
to
amplify
one
noise.
1.2 to
so,
1 on the 15
there's something else going on here.
Other, like the 20 meters is with
if
two.
If you do return the
minimum,
antenna,
but usually
there's an easy way to build a 10-meter magnetic loop that would cost about
my
$40. And experiment with that
basically a little bit improved version
rather than keeping the chameleon antenna.
That one,
but
I think
I don't think it's the amplifier
which I also have
that
much
makes
thing.
Him be able
I
to
mean,
hear
honestly,
everything
the
versus
differences
nothing.
Are negligible. But yeah. So if I were able to tune it on 15 meters and not as good on the other band, does that mean that it could be something wrong with the particular antenna that I bought?
It's difficult to say. You know, they're all kind of a little bit different one way or the other. Theoretically, there's a certain amount of capacitance designed into your loop antenna that should give you a reasonably acceptable match. I don't think you should expect much on 80 meters. A 3-meter diameter magnetic loops tend not to be good for 80 meters. I think you mentioned that one of the additional add-ons were to increase the size of the loop. That would make things a little bit better, but not much, because, again, the lower the frequency, the greater the inefficiency of the magnetic loop. And at 80 meters, even with an increased loop size, it's still not going to be a great, a terribly efficient antenna. So, I mean, but the idea that you could only get it to tune at 15 meters strikes me as there's something wrong with that. I don't know whether it's the capacitor or whether it's the geometry of the two loops between each other, but, you know, you might want to contact Chameleon. I don't know if you may have already tried that, and ask them for any suggestions. It should be much more tunable than, say, just 15 meters. You should be able to get at least 10 to 20 meters and possibly a decent 40 meters. But again, you have to keep in mind that these are inherently inefficient radiating antennas. So, and you're operating, unfortunately, through a small aperture you call your window. So putting that all together kind of would lead to a not terribly optimistic results. But you should have better receiving results. That's what concerns me. So, Rich, who doubled with you the last transmission, mentioned that as well. So, although the other magnetic loop operates for you, this one doesn't. So, there's something wrong with it. It may simply be the geometries involved or an actual problem with the tuner. Well, let me ask you yet another question slightly removed. Do you have anything like a nano VNA where you can actually sweep it and hear where the impedances go along the bandwidth?
No, but funny you should mention that. I was watching reviews of nano VNA because I found out they exist today. So they're not that expensive, I guess. I should get one. I don't have any other analyzers except for the built-in SWR option in 705. That's it.
Okay, I mean, it's a very good tool to have in general for anyone interested in antennas. You know, even if you buy an antenna and you hook it up, it's always good to document what its characteristics are and then repeat the sweep every so often to see if it's drifting away due to some kind of deterioration. So having a vector network analyzer was somewhat cost prohibitive in the bad old days when they were first brought out by the big guys. You know, they had $20,000 and they were 50 pounds. Now they're less than a pound, and you can get them for about $85-$90 unless you want a slightly larger screen. Now, I would recommend it. I have a nano VNA myself. I have a bunch of VNAs. I tend to collect VNAs. But still, it gives you a great deal of insight. If you sweep your magnetic loop and find that it has a better SWR at some point that you have no clue why it's doing that, or if it has multiple dips and you're catching one of the lesser dips, that you might be false tuning into a kind of false resonant notch. It gives you a great deal of insight. So I would consider getting it. You know, it'll be helpful for this situation, probably helpful for any other antenna situation that you come up with in the ensuing years.
Well, thank you very much. I certainly will get the nano VNA. Yes, it's very cheap, but as long as I can sweep the bands, it's just the loops. That's the first thing I'm going to do tomorrow. It's as you're advised to try to move around that driving loop. And another thing I was going to do, maybe get on FD8 and see. I just downloaded the software today. I haven't really started yet, but if I'm getting out anywhere, if anybody hears me, that's a way to find out as well.
Yeah, that's a good idea. It requires the least amount of energy. It's a very low signal protocol. If you get the software, there are other modes in which you're able to act as a beacon signal, and you can look up on websites to see if any of the reverse beacons detected you and get an idea of your general propagation. Yeah, there's a lot of little things to kind of check out what's going on in this type of a situation. But yeah, certainly FT8 is another way of seeing if you could get out at all. Also, you know, get an idea of if you're receiving any signals. It sounds like it's both deaf and dumb, which is not a good sign for a magnetic loop. It shouldn't be quite this deaf and dumb. Again, I understand that you're dealing with limitations of Faraday cage, which kind of complicate things.
Yep, all these options are. I don't know what's happening, but there's a lot of noise. But thank you very much for your advices, and I'm not gonna feel a little bit not comfortable holding up the net for just one question, my particular issue. Thank you very much, and I will try all the options we've discussed and see if anything changes before. Maybe I shall have the time to return it. But again, thank you very much. Back to that, KE2ALP.
AF2P with a comment.
Yes.
Now, if there's any way you can take the, if you can go portable, go out to a park somewhere, and just test the antenna under no Faraday cage restriction to make sure the antenna's working. That might be a doable thing. I don't know. That's something I've done. AF2P back to net.
Okay, that's a good point, Ed. I mean, the thing that troubles me is he says that, you know, on 10 meters, the best that he could do is a 3-to-1 visua. So even outdoors, although if you're too close to your magnetic loop, you can't couple with it and detune it. So there's also that slight annoyance of things like magnetic loops. But that's a good point, Ed. Well, what do you think, Ivan?
I think it's a very good idea, and there's plausible chance that I can find, you know, get to the bottom of it. The only thing, I just don't drive. I would just have to carry it out somewhere in Queens and set it up without people asking questions and coming up to me. There have been cases that local cops would come up to hams and ask for their license because they were very apprehended at the site.
Yeah, we live in suspicious times, but, you know, give it a try. They're not going to arrest you. They might annoy you. They might tell you to get lost. But, you know, your ego will be hurt, but nothing else. So if it's doable, and I think one of the things about Chameleon is that it's supposed to be portable. You mentioned that part of your kit included a flexible loop, right? So maybe you can try out the flexible loop. It's a little bit easier to transport back and forth and kind of hide in the foliage.
Oh, yeah.
WPDZ.
Can I ask how much
this antenna costs?
My radiators with me, those huge things. I just get the LMR for $100 you came with, and comes with a duffel bag and so on. A 5 takes no space at all. So, yeah, I will do that. I'll try FDA tomorrow and move around the loop because in any event, I'm more interested in the indoor operation of the loop. So it's very important for me to get it working, considering conditions that I'll be working at 90% of the time. But I'll definitely test it before I return it somewhere in the open space.
AC2GS. Yeah, well, I mean, the point is not that you're operating it for portable for the rest of your life, but it gets rid of one question, that being, is the loop mechanically broken? If it operates outside, then it's not necessarily the loop. It's the environment that the loop is in your apartment. And, Rich, I believe the price is approximately $657.
Yeah, Ivan, if you're not, especially, again, I go back to 20 meters, because I have a lot of experience on the low, on HF with magnetic loops. And if you're not able to be heard or hear anything on 20 meters, got to return this antenna. And I'm talking 20 meters in the late afternoon is best. As I said, I've built 3 magnetic loops. I overbuilt one. Now I have to chop it down a little bit because I've lost 10 meters on it. And I remotely tune it on Wi-Fi, but for $50, you could build your own 10-meter loop and know if it's possible inside your apartment. For $50, you find a capacitor on eBay, and you're done. That's how simple they are. So if you need to know any more about, you know, how to choose how big the loop should be and all that, you can email me or give me a call. I'm good in QST. So unless this is working at that price, unless this is working beautifully for you and you're making QSOs, you know, whenever you want, I would think heavily of returning it.
Yeah, your signal, the last person who tried to throw their call sign out, your signal is full of noise. It's about 70% noise and 30% audio. Give it another try and try and consider reorienting your whip if you're using a handy talkie or boost your power in whatever way you might. And try again.
Yeah, I've just got set up right now.
WB2CTT. Yeah, that's much better. What's your comment?
I live in Queens. I have a car. I have a battery-operated radio. You'd like to go in the future, in the near future, sometime outside someplace. Send me an email, WB2CanadaQuebecTango@euro.com.
Ah, very good. Thank you for that. Ivan, you got an offer. Did you hear it?
Oh, yeah, and I'm have no words. Thank you for all the support. I will definitely WB2CQT, I believe the call. And yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Rich, for your advice too. I will definitely check before at that price, as you mentioned. Yep, I have to test it out in an open area where I will make my, because I still kind of have a little suspicion that maybe it's getting reflected, all the power I'm radiating getting reflected back at the antenna, the chicken wire, in the, I would say, 2.5 feet rounded. Bastinet, KE2DLB.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Larry, for that very kind offer. That's an example of amateur radio fraternity, people helping each other, and I always like to see that. And Ivan, I wish you all the luck, and please come back and tell us how things worked out. I'm very, very curious. And thank you, too. Rich, for your input. You're our mag loop guy. Let's see. It's 9:51. I guess, Wesley, you want to do your thing?
Yeah, thanks, Shane. Yeah, of course. We have a little bit of time. Choose object. We might not have enough time to talk about it, so I'm going to try to be fast. I prefer you to talking, and I just point at the direction. So I sent you a few emails, and those emails were about different things. So one of the things was why universe is accelerating. It was kind of skeptic response, but we have a Doppler effect, the red and blue shift in space astrophysics. Then we have who made first man-made diamonds and whatever the situation is with diamonds right now. And we have elements not present in Earth. So I would suggest we start from that. So let me drop. Okay, so we have... somebody may think what was not found yet. So we have a periodic table component, and we have a number of components here. It was delivered by Mendeleev, the Russian scientist, before the revolution of Russia at the end of 19th century. So it was the Tsar Russia at that time. And since that, there was plenty of elements found that actually was not known. So many things. What is not known yet? Is it possible that there are some periodic temple components that are not found on the Earth? Maybe they are somewhere in space. And because those components are measured also by atomic masses, we think, is anything that is over the mass of 260? Okay. So when we go to that, when we say a few things, that the atomic mass is, we think about weight, right? But it's measured in units Dalton, and this is like 1/12 of the mass of neutral atom carbon, 12 in its nuclear electronic ground state at rest. So we may think, okay, we have a certain base at which we can find what is what. Like if we have 1 pound and then we have less than 1 pound and what unit we would use. Or we have a kilogram, which is the SI unit, and then what is less than 1 kilogram. So it's milligram, microgram, nanogram, picofemtoatom. Right. So That would be the masses. Okay. And human is wondering what else is not known. It appears that most of the new elements was found because of the rapid neutron capture. and that produce the elements that are heavier than iron, which has the, if I remember, atomic mass 55.8. So we have uranium, plutonium, gold and silver. Of course, gold and silver is known. Uranium is known, but platinum, oh, platinum is also known, right. But then we have neptunium. And neptunium, then we have americium, then we have ruthenium, technetium 99, fluorium, fluorine 18. And then we have altogether so far known 118 chemical elements that are in periodic table components. And we think, what else? And there was an article. The article says that the cosmic forge, how ancient stars created or crafted elements beyond Earth reach. So we think somewhere in space there are planets or there are environments where there are some of the elements not known. And we think, okay, I would love to have a 1 pound of diamonds or 1 pound of gold, because diamonds are more expensive. And some other people take the some tools and go to look for different kind of germs, but we're not talking about this yet. I have that in mind also. Okay, so question to Dr. Roy. The mass is exceeding 260. And eventually elements not found in the Earth. We know that the Manhattan Project allowed to find many of them. And another question would be, if you could say a few words about conventional imaging techniques, there would be a computed tomography, CT, and magnetic resonance, MRI, and molecular imaging with positron emission photography, topography, which is PET, PET. Back to you.
Okay, I'm not quite sure how the two subjects connect in any way, shape, or form. It's kind of like you just cobbled it to the end of a discussion of highly unstable, highly massive elements that haven't been synthesized on Earth yet.
Okay, no, I said because if we're talking about elements that were found after Mendeleev created his stable components, and some of them are used right now in the medical field, you may say a few words about it, but mainly alluding to elements. Is it possible that there are elements that not found on Earth and exist somewhere else? But
well, it's not quite a matter of found on Earth, because as you mentioned, there was a whole bunch of synthesized elements that no longer exist on Earth. And the reason why is the bonding energy of nuclei are very interesting. The lowest potential energy level is up. That's why fusing lighter elements into iron produces energy as a net effect. It's exothermic. And producing anything heavier than iron is an endothermic effect. You don't get energy. You need energy to make it. This is why gold and silver and such are created in the core of neutron stars colliding with each other, supplying massive quantities of energy. So at these high energies, high bond potentials in the nucleus occur, but they're unstable, and so they decay into lighter elements over time. It's very possible that the some of the atoms that make up your own body started off life billions of years ago as much heavier, unstable isotopes of elements that are not naturally seen on the Earth anymore, decayed into smaller atoms and were taken up as a part of your body. So all of these modern day discoveries of elements, it's not like they looked under a rock and they found an element. They had to make it themselves. They had to synthesize it. They put it into an atom smasher and they smashed particular isotopes of available atoms and created very short living elements. That's where you get a lot of the radioactive stuff that we use. Americium is used in a lot of smoke detectors. And, you know, a lot of the radioactive material decays, and we use its decay products. So I think that's what's going on. And is it possible that there are other species, other atoms, other elements that are incredibly unstable? They'll survive maybe a trillionth of a second that we have not been able to synthesize yet? Yeah, sure. So, you know, I don't think that that's amazing. There are labs all over the place that continue to try and synthesize heavier and heavier elements, and knowing that, you know, they're not going to be terribly stable. You're not going to be able to build a railroad using that element because it'll be gone in a couple of seconds. But before it's gone, it'll teach us a little bit something about the nature of the universe.
Okay, so, fluorine 18. I'm not sure if I properly pronounce fluorine. Fluorine? How should I pronounce it?
Fluorine.
Okay, fluorine. So, fluorine was one of the 18, was one of the 18 megaelectron volt, was high energy protons, radioactive material. And it was produced in the form of water solution. But anyhow, this one is used in PET, PET. So thanks to nature, not the nature, thanks to human level of development and science, we're not going to go to all of the other techniques. Let's go to about the PET, and could you say something how the positron emission tomography was used with fluorine 18, which is more symbol F18 or 18F. Back to you.
AC2GS. Okay. Fluorine 18 is an unstable radioactive material. It undergoes, I believe, beta decay, in which it emits a positron. That's the nature of positron emission tomography. You tag the fluorine 18 into a material that gets absorbed by specific things in the human body, and it will light up a PET scanner. PET scanners work because positron emission tomography, the positron very quick, when beta decay occurs, a positron is released. Electrons are all over them and they have opposite charge. They attract them and they mutually annihilate each other. When a positron and an electron annihilate each other, in order for momentum to be conserved, you have to create some, and energy to be conserved, you have to create two gamma photons going 180 degrees from each other, canceling out the momentum and supply and conserving the energy. So you have a detector that detects gamma emissions. It detects it in both front and back, and computers read the sensors, see that there is a gamma burst on both ends, and put that together as a positron being annihilated, and tag that three-dimensional space and create a computational tomography 3D image of where it lit up in the body. And by showing it, you can light up different structures in the human body according to how you've tagged, what material you tagged with the radioactive fluorine. So that's it, a very short description of how positron imaging is used in medical diagnosis.
Okay, thank you very much for that. And talking about smoke detectors, it used to be, it's not now, technetium, technetium, sorry, americium. Americium was used in smoke detectors, pretty reliable, but because of the hysteria about radioactive elements, was pretty much wild. They decided to change it for something that is worse, still works, but not as good as that. And americium was a synthetic chemical element with atomic number 95 that was synthesized. So it was created by human beings. I believe europium? Europium was too. I'm not sure. Gosh, I'm getting old. Anyhow, so you correct me. Europium 63? No, it's atomic number 63, right. Europium was synthetic or was natural?
Synthetic.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay, right. Right. Okay, so, americium 241. That was one that was used in smoke detectors. And most of those new elements were created with the bombardment of neutrons. And the pretty much known homemade neutron gun, I can say, previously I was afraid if that is the sensitive information, but I found that it's printed in Wikipedia, so by that, I'm not afraid to say how that is done. So, neutrons are produced when alpha particles hit any of lighter isotopes, including beryllium, carbon, and oxygen. So, if you have a beryllium window, which is a piece of beryllium glass, and you have americium 241, you're creating neutron gas, like gun. So that one is capable of changing other structures because it's a bombardment of. It creates it becomes the neutron source by mixing alpha emitter with. You could use radium, polonium, or americium too. But all of them are alpha emitters with atomic weight isotope, usually by blending powders of two materials. But the one that is known is through the beryllium window. And that is actually what science is using to create other, to break the bonds of the existing elements and create a new one.
ACTPO.
Go ahead.
Yes, Jeff.
Thank you, Roy. I was waiting for the net control station to recognize me. Right. So I think this is a good time for a disclaimer about the safety of all of these materials. Maybe Roy will chime in on that.
Okay, certainly. As I mentioned, all these things are terribly unstable, and that's why you don't find them here on Earth, because the Earth is billions of years old and had time for most of that stuff to just decay down to much safer stuff. All of these things emit all kinds of nasty alpha, beta, and gamma particles. Just look at to bash your DNA to pieces. But you could add to that, Jeff.
ACTPL. Yeah, and other things have been mentioned which are ill-advised for the home experimenter, as in you should absolutely not go into an older style smoke detector and try to obtain a sample of any sort of radioactive material out of it. It's not only ill-advised, but it's also a federal offense. You should not be playing with any of these things that have been mentioned, including beryllium, which will kill you almost for sure. Go ahead, Russ.
Yes, beryllium is dangerous, but it's been used in weird places. I don't know if you're familiar, but there was a French loudspeaker company that made, I believe it was tweeters out of beryllium, and because they thought they looked pretty, they showed it without the grill. So if you want to be killed by pretty things, then get yourself a beryllium tweeter.
Okay, thank you very much for that comment.
Correct, the things that will kill us. Anyway, back to that, sorry to interject, but I really think some disclaimers are appropriate. And I did want to make a comment earlier on, there's a lot of doubling, and I think that we need to respect each other, announce our station, and see if we're doubling with anyone.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that comment. I was also at the same impression. The thing is that should we say that science is inappropriate?